It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
Time for California Wine Country with Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn in Santa Rosa. Couple guests today, former St. Francis winemaker, now has Mackey Cellars, Tom Mackey. Good to see you again. And we were just talking, I guess you were in when you were the winemaker at St. Francis, and it was like many, many years ago.
Well, I retired around 2012, but I was there for about 30 years before.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Dan Berger. Talk about Mr. Mackey.
Tom's been around a long time, and he knows where all the great grapes are. So it was no surprise when I heard that he was getting back in the business. And these are really good wines. Tom was up at the Yosemite Vintners Holiday some years ago, and I was the moderator for the thing. And Tom is a great speaker, but he's also a great winemaker. And some of these wines are just fabulous. And the most interesting thing for me is the diversity of the styles. This is really a fun I'll call it a new winery. Well, but you're sold out of everything you made from 13, so
13 is gone, 14 is just about gone, and now we're halfway through the 15. So
what was your first vintage?
13. Yeah, and 13, basically, we hadn't got our bond yet, so I had to purchase some a barrel each of wine and put it in the, you know, that was our first wine for friends and family. You know,
right.
A barrel each is going to give you maybe 24 cases a barrel, so 14 was our real true vintage, made and produced and all bottled all the way through.
Tom Mackey Cellars. Okay, Tom, give us your history. You were with St. Francis for so long, but how did it all begin?
Well, I had wine. I started out as a teacher, and I had wine always as an avocation. In fact, one of my roommates up in college in Spokane introduced me to good wine. And, of course, when I was a kid, we'd have it occasionally at home. But he introduced me to good wine in the late 60s. And since the late 60s, I became more and more fascinated. When I came back to San Francisco, where I'm from, I did a more thorough investigation up in Napa and Sonoma. And then, in particular, the European wines, the Bordeaux, the Burgundy, the Rhone, and then the Rheingau, the Rheinhessen, the Mosel, and the Rhones. And I just couldn't believe how complex there was. That's the first thing I noticed was the complexity of the wine.
Oh, my God. Barry Herbst lives. We haven't seen you in so long.
The late Barry Herbst is here.
Amazing resurrection.
Yeah, he's always late, but Barry Herbst, the wine buyer from Bottle Barn. We got a lot to talk about. I'm glad to see you again. It's been a while.
Thank you.
Okay, so Tom Mackey, you went to Fresno, not UC Davis, correct?
Correct. I got into Davis because I already had a degree, and so they're a bit reticent to take you to get another bachelor's, but I was able to convince them with a three-part argument that, number one, I wasn't a wealthy retired businessman, number two, I wasn't born into the business, and number three, I already took my all the pre-science classes. And so I got in. In the meantime, I checked out Davis. I checked out the job situation, how the placement was upon graduation. And I saw that Davis is a solid 67% placement back then. Mm. I don't know what it is now, but
Probably bigger, I would think.
Mm. And I saw Fresno was a solid 100%. You graduated there, you got a job. So I was sold. And also I liked at that time, it's not the case now, but at that time, Fresno was much more hands-on. They would point you to some rows saying, here's how you take care of them. Brought us into the small winery where here's the equipment, here's how to run it. Now you're in charge of those rows of grapes, and now you're going to make the wine out of it.
Steve, you'd be amazed at how many people went to Fresno who are great winemakers.
I was always surprised that Fresno State University was a big wine thing.
But it's not that there's anything wrong with a degree from Davis. Davis has a slightly different thrust. Mm-hmm. But when I got to know, for example, Richard Arrowood, one of the great winemakers in America, he went to Fresno State. He's been in this studio many times.
And Joe Heitz
went to Fresno. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of fabulous winemakers who got their start there because of that hands-on thing. And they would often start you with a project that nobody wanted to do. Mike Martini told me he started out with potatoes.
Really?
He didn't want to do it. He did it anyway.
Is he making vodka?
Great winemaker. So, yeah. Yeah, no, they weren't making it.
What were they doing with the potatoes?
It was the growing thing. How do you grow anything?
Right.
And then if you learn how to grow something like potatoes, then you learn about how to grow vines. So
amazing.
Really interesting stuff.
Amazing. So, okay, Tom. So you got a degree from
Davis second bachelor.
And then at Fresno.
No, I didn't go to Davis. I went to Fresno and got a second bachelor's.
Okay, gotcha.
And then a master's.
Wow. Master's in winemaking?
In food science with a specialty in enology.
Wow. All right. And Dan, talk about first St. Francis, where Tom spent so many years.
Well, St. Francis initially started out actually right in Kenwood, just at the north end there across the street from Chateau Saint-Jean. That was Joe Martin's property. It was an interesting property. They had a lot of interesting things. Years and years ago, I was visiting Joe, and he said, "Hey, you like vinegar?" I said, "Yeah, what do you got?" He says, "I had a batch of wine go bad. Here's some bottles." And he gave me a handful of bottles of vinegar. They were fabulous. They were great vinegar. And I said, "What was this beforehand?" He says, "That would have been a great Pinot Noir, but you've got the best vinegar in California now."
Wow. It
was a great, fun guy Joe was.
Amazing. All right. So how many years again was St. Francis, Tom?
About 30. Not quite 30.
30.
Yeah.
Jeez.
We started out at the small place right across the street from St. Jean and gradually expanded that. And actually, Joe Martin also put the property in green space? Open space.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vineyards now could no longer be developed. They had to stay in agriculture. But we had expanded as much as we could, as much as the water system, septic system take. And so we were using another, by the early 90s, we were renting out space at another couple places, and we decided to look to expand significantly, and we had some properties. Our business partners and our marketing company helped us and to get other vineyards, and we were managing that. We were gradually notching our production up. And then in the late 90s, we decided to go all out and build a brand new facility, and that's where St. Francis currently is. It was a three-phase construction. They started out, first of all, with the main building, and then the second year was the barrel building, and the third year was the visitor center. And that property, and they had four vineyards they had at the time, all within Sonoma County. And that's where, and that was one of those lifetime things. You're able to not only help design, but develop, equip with the equipment, and then staff and set up the staffing and the structure of the whole property. That's
a huge deal. Once in your life. Tom Mackey is here from Tom Mackey's Cellars, 30-some years with St. Francis as the winemaker. Our dear friend, my brother from another mother or my sister from another mister, I can't remember. The great Jim Morris is back with us. He's now with Charles Krug. He changes gigs every week.
Almost as often as you change your shirt.
Well, that's every 2 weeks.
There you go.
All right, Charles Krug. Now, you're driving to Napa every day from Healdsburg.
I'm doing a 45-minute drive every day from Healdsburg.
Oh, good Lord.
I swear to God that Sonoma County is in my DNA. It has been forever. I live in Healdsburg. I've been running wineries to and fro. In fact, I even have some history in the old St. Francis building. I started St. Anne's Crossing.
That's right.
Down there with Naked Wines and all that. So some great history that you guys created there. But
did you run across any ghosts?
None.
We heard about the ghosts. I was there and I never saw any ghosts running around over there.
Mm-hmm. But, I literally got an offer I couldn't refuse to go to Napa. And I had two kids in college at the time. And it's like, okay, I'll go. So, and actually, it's a pretty amazing place. There is nothing in Sonoma County that prepares you to be in Napa.
Really?
It's just, I mean, Napa truly is Disneyland and Sonoma County's frontierland.
Totally different.
Yeah. It's
Dan, your thoughts on that?
I had, some years ago, I wrote an article. An editor from a New York magazine called me on the phone. He says, "Hey, I got a great idea for you." He says, "I want you to write this story for me. The headline is Napa versus Sonoma." I said, what is that? I said, the headline's very intriguing, Napa versus Sonoma. What kind of an article do you want? He says, I have absolutely no idea. I just love the headline. You write the story. So I spent the next, like, 3 weeks interviewing people from both sides of the hill, and there is a difference. It was a funny story.
I'm sure it was. Is it still available online?
The article now, it's, you know, it was a trade magazine, and everybody who read it loved the story. The best story I remember out of that was I asked John Williams, who was the winemaker, still is the owner of winemaker of Frog's Leap, and I said, have you ever bought fruit from Sonoma County? And without a blink, he said, I think it's illegal.
Now, we have settled down, right? I mean, these days, Sonoma and Napa get along good.
There's a little more cross-exchange happening.
There's a few people from Sonoma who call Napa the auto parts.
I know. We had somebody on recently who said that. No, Napa, that's an auto parts.
We could also say that Napa's that valley one hillside closer to the desert, too.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Well, I never heard that one, Tom.
But I think the expectation level is so high of visitors in Napa Valley. The bar is so high. The expectations are, it's like, I want my grapes peeled by hand by, tall, muscular Egyptian slaves or something.
They have machines.
And fan me while I'm eating grapes.
Exactly. And, the level of expectation is so high there, where here in Sonoma County, typically, the guy cleaning the toilets is the winemaker who also does the books and the
little more down and dirty.
Yeah, we're real.
And it's like,
we're more real.
Yeah, right? But it's like you can still capture things like that over in Napa. And I got blessed to actually work for Charles Krug. It's the oldest winery in Napa. I call it the Olduvai Gorge of, the wine world over there, because Jacob Schramm was our first winemaker and Jacob Berenger was our second winemaker. So we have a little bit of, a provenance there.
Yeah, there's some history.
But it's an amazing place, and it's owned by the Mondavis. And it's not the Robert Mondavi side, it's the Peter Mondavi Sr. side.
Or the Mondavi, depending on who you're talking to.
Exactly, depends on which way the wind's blowing.
Barry Herbst, wine buyer at Bottle Barn. Great to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
So long, man.
Been a little busy.
Okay, talk about this new thing that has kept you so busy, and it's starting to come to fruition.
Yeah, we've made it to beta testing now.
Explain what the whole thing is.
It's an online store combined with flash sales that will be pretty much cold out parts of Bottle Barn. We'll run about 40, 50 items at a time online that you can buy through a shopping cart and get free shipping on 6 bottles wherever you are.
Is it just wine or beer and spirits?
Just wine right now. Beer and spirits are a little more problematic in terms of shipping, especially beer.
Yeah,
they don't want
imagine.
You shipping it.
Right.
Spirits, you're okay in California, but nowhere else. So.
Right. You guys have built a whole new
Yeah, we took a
addition.
Whole separate space. I'm buying wine specifically for online, but some of the stuff is also in the store, but we have to buy in such a way that we can offer the free shipping. So it has to be really specific good deals. And we're going to be running flash sales where we have large quantities of things that'll sell out like our insider does in a day or two, and that'll be it.
So when is this actually coming to fruition?
Looks like we're in the 2 to 3 week range now.
Okay.
Before, as long as we don't find too many bugs during the beta testing, it'll be ready to go. And we got to deal with Harvest Fair in the middle of all this, which is a busy time.
So. Well, yeah, but we're all going to D.C. next week. So when we come back and when
the
you
wine
get
will be
closer,
waiting for you.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll talk more about it.
Definitely.
Our dear friend Jim Morris is here. He's now working for Charles Krug in Napa. It is California Wine Country with Dan Berger, and today we're featuring the former longtime St. Francis winemaker Tom Mackey, who now has Tom Mackey Cellars. We're going to taste some of this and talk about it. How are we doing on time? Oh, I just got 5 minutes.
That's an eternity.
Yeah. That's 3 hours in radio.
I was saying, we can get through all five.
Time for Cabernet.
Power taste.
So, Dan, again, talk about... we talked about St. Francis, but talk about Tom Mackey Cellars.
Well, let me back up a second and show you that Sonoma Valley is really where... Tom had his start because that's where St. Francis was located. And a lot of what was taking place in Sonoma Valley was really under the radar in the early years. I remember in the early 70s when Kenwood first opened up, and the name Kenwood didn't mean anything at that time to anybody. And but yet at the same time, there were a lot of people in Sonoma County who understood where Kenwood was, and they knew that Kenwood was a wine area. So, Tom, maybe you can explain what took place in terms of the reputation of Sonoma Valley. It was really – people are misunderstand. They talk about Napa Valley and Sonoma Valley like they're opposites. And Sonoma Valley is a specific small location.
It is. And the wineries, I remember visiting them as a early 20-somethings. And I remember there was Buena Vista. There was Sebastiani. And about 1970, Grand Cru, I think, was put in the valley. And then 74, I think, was St. Jean. And there was much more concentration of wineries on 29 and in Napa. And whereas here, you had to go further. There's vineyards are more spread out. It seemed a bit more, I wouldn't say rustic, but I'd say multiple crop valley or area than Napa, which is becoming more and more of a monoculture. Even back then, they don't have any. Neither of us have anywhere near the wineries that are there now. I mean, you even mentioned trying to start a winery, and you'll have three or four layers of enemies to go through. But
talk to David Ramey.
But now it's. The differences, I think, are somewhat less. They're less noticeable. There are, as you mentioned, there are just your biggest difference is the acre of grapes, how much it costs. And so once that everything flows downhill from that. And so there's the property expectation there. And you can't blame them if they're focusing on Cabernet because that's what they're known for. And whereas we're more multiple varieties here, I think we have more microclimates. And
we do. There's no question about
that. Well, there's also a couple of additional things going on with Sonoma Valley, because Sonoma Valley, a little bit like Healdsburg and some other areas that were populated primarily by Italian immigrants at the very beginning of this whole process, we see a lot of wines being produced from vineyards that are not entirely homogeneous in terms of the variety. You could go into Healdsburg and buy a Zinfandel, and it's probably, 30% stuff that's not Zinfandel, but it's fine. It's great wine. So, and in those days, you still had access to, you had Petit Sirah, you had some Sauvignon Blanc growing in there. Sonoma Valley was really a wonderful resource, and it has now become a place where you can actually hang your hat on the image and the quality of the products.
Right. Yeah. And
well, that's
Tom?
Where the, back when I started in the early 80s with Joe Martin at St. Francis, back then, in many viticultural areas in the state, the planting was put as many varieties and see what works. And also, the old planting was the 8-foot rows, the 8-foot spacing, 12-foot rows. It was called the California sprawl. He'd put it up there. You'd have a couple of wires to develop on there, and it was a big, you had to
a jungle.
Yeah, there was a jungle. Yeah. You had to cut back on the canes before. Harvesting, and you had to dive in there to get the grapes. And now, I mean, the evolution of both grape growing and winemaking has just been remarkable over the last 40, 50 years. It's just phenomenal.
This is a really fine 2015 Cabernet.
Yeah, beautiful. Let's talk about this.
Where's this
2015 Cabernet Sonoma Valley.
This is a last year we got the Cabernet from Wild Oak Ranch, which is St. Francis. It's the vineyard right up against the hill there. On the property on the east side of 12, and the vines aren't terribly young. I believe they're about 12, 14 years old, and the fruit's concentrated, but it's balanced. I like the character of the fruit, the varietal depth, the trueness, and also we did a little blending. I think the thing about 15 was that year the California, or the Sonoma and other places, Cabernet crop was down by, in some cases, 50%.
That was an early harvest, right?
Yes, historically early harvest. Yeah. And the crop was so small that I mentioned I was getting about half of what I contracted. And so I checked out some friends in the area who had other varieties. Because at that time, when I found my size and was getting ready to harvest, any Cabernet that was unclaimed was not worth buying. So I said, well, we were planning on a Bordeaux blend or planning on doing some blending, so what better? We looked around and checked, and we found a Petit Verdot vineyard, the Stemmick vineyard just across from St. Francis, and then the Len Woolard vineyard just north of St. Francis on the other side of the hill, up against the hills, and that's where we got our Malbec. And so we did our blending trials, and after three or four attempts, we came up with this and tried it again. It showed consistency, and so this is our blend. In the meantime, we put a Bordeaux blend together because we had more Cabernet and more Malbec and Petit Verdot, and said, well, we're meaning to put a Bordeaux blend together, so here it is, and it's turned out to be our series red wine, also from the same vineyards.
Dan, talk about this one.
Well, I think the 15 is really a great example of regional characteristics. There's a little bit of that bay leaf character, which I just adore in Cabernet in particular. It doesn't have as much of the sage as I often will see in some regions, but I think that's part of it, is this beautiful blending, because the wine is so young. It's just a baby. But it's going to be a beautiful wine with a little bit of aeration. Just put it in a decanter or put it in a bottle for a couple of years.
Okay, it is California Wine Country. Dan Berger, my co-host, of course. Long time, 30 years plus, winemaker at St. Francis. Tom Mackey is with us. He's got Tom Mackey Cellars. Jim Morris, our buddy from Charles Krug. What's going on with Charles Krug now in Napa now?
Charles Krug is one of the coolest places that you guys haven't been to over in Sonoma County, folks. I got to get you over the hill. One of the things...
Give me a helicopter.
It's like, you know what? I'll come over and pick you up.
Okay.
I have a litter that will walk. I'll carry you through the brush under. When I started work over there 6 months ago, and one of the new CEO of the winery, he's been there about a year, a guy named Judd Wallenbrock, and I worked together at Mickey Slumberger. And one of the things that
That's what I always called it, Mickey
Slumberger. And one of the things that he said, he goes, we're going to recapture the Mondavi family name. We're going to recapture Charles Krug as the cultural hub of Napa Valley. And so we have this great estate over there that has this magnificent property, this great, all these great buildings. But there wasn't a lot going on, events-wise or things like that. We can do a lot of things. So there's an idea factory over there. There's a whole bunch of very creative people, and they just have encouraged me to bring in different things that will really showcase the property and just to be a great community resource. So we've started a comedy series with the ladies from the Laugh Cellar here in town, Lisa Pidge and Carly Pidge.
Right on.
That's a monthly thing. Our next comedy show is a week from Saturday on the 13th. So you can find out information on the Charles Krug website. We're part of the Napa Valley Film Festival, so we've done outdoor films all summer long. We're going to be doing some unique music series starting next year.
Cool.
We're using Pete Segacio's Salumis from up in northern Sonoma County.
He was in a few weeks ago. He's bringing his salumi, and it's un-freaking believable.
Yeah, so we have kind of an exclusive on. He infuses our wine into all of his salumis for us. So it's just an amazing place to come and, you know, kind of drink wine from really the heart of the beginning of Napa Valley wine country.
We will have you back in to talk about some of this stuff after we get back from D.C. It's Charles Krug, KRUG.com. Check it out. Dan Berger, of course, is here. Tom Mackey, 30-plus years with St. Francis as a winemaker and now has Mackey Cellars. What are you guys drinking?
We got a little Chardonnay over here that Barry brought. This is from Bottle Barn. It's from Fry, which is had been in business for forever. This is one of the Gallo projects. This is Fry Brothers up in – what's the appellation on that, Barry?
Russian River Valley.
Nice little spice notes.
Yeah, this one a double gold at the fair and pretty darn reasonable. $13.50 a bottle.
Jeez.
No complaints.
Yeah, I think we've already –
And it's F-R-E-I. It's pronounced Fry?
Mm-hmm. Fry Brothers, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's It was a brand. It wasn't even a brand. For years and years, it was just a property that they owned up in Dry Creek. Hmm. And they never used it as a brand. It was 78 or 79 or something like that.
Yeah.
I forget what it was. Sometime in the 70s, they opened it up.
Been around forever. Yeah. Big Rich style. Not shy.
Not at all shy.
Yeah.
And Barry Herbst, wine buyer for Bottle Barn, what, as far as Charles Krug and Tom Mackey sellers?
We carry them both. Yep. From Tom, we've got the 2015 Cabernet that we first tried from Dry Creek. And then
Sonoma Valley.
I'm sorry, Sonoma Valley. And then the award winner, the gold medal, we're going to get in. We just negotiated that deal just now. So we'll have that out on the Harvest Fair for it. Won a gold medal. And then Charles Krug, we've got Sauvignon Blanc and Merlot. Both really good sellers at the store. Reasonably priced.
Sure. So. Tom, come on. I need to hear you talk more about what you do because you're fascinating.
Well, I found out after I retired that I wasn't that good at golf. And so I decided to... with a friend of mine, with Clyde Galantine, he and I made some home wine, and turned out nice. And I got the grapes. Being at St. Francis so many years, I had a lot of grape connections. We bought from many, many vineyards all throughout Sonoma County, so I had access to a lot of good fruit. But we made a little bit of wine in 2012, and said, well, you know, we didn't listen to our shrinks, and said, let's go commercial. And so we decided to. Explore that, and I found the intricacies of permitting and licensing and fees and taxes and government regulations. And to this point, I admire the people who do that, especially the bigger wineries.
Yeah.
But
amazing,
and
huh?
Yes,
they have whole staffs for that now.
Yeah, they do. And so we got our permits, our bonds, and our licenses, and our LLCs, and this and that. And we decided what we wanted to do early on. We found a place where we could make the wine in Santa Rosa, Inspiration Cellars, just off of Coffee. And if we have time, I have a fire or two story.
Yeah,
but, yeah, go ahead. We got time.
Well, compared to the people who lost considerably more, ours worked out to be a very minor inconvenience. But nonetheless, we couldn't get in. We had to sneak around back ways and climb fences just to get our wines because we had fermenting wine in the in the winery, and so we were able to sneak around, but the power was out. So fortunately, we didn't have anything under refrigeration. We were able to do our punch downs and our checks and everything, but eventually, if you showed how you belong, they're worried about fire starting, they're worried about looting. You can't argue why they barred the entrance.
Of course.
But so they after a couple of days, they were letting people in, and as long as you showed proof of you belonged there. And so we went in there. Eventually the power came on and cleaned up whatever ash there was. And like I said, minor inconvenience compared to how bad this fire treated other people. This was not even almost not even worth mentioning.
Hair raising, though.
Yeah, no kidding. Scary. Dan?
Well, I think more than anything else, what's at play right now today is that we're starting to see a lot of innovation taking hold. And when Tom started in the business, you're talking 3 decades, a lot of stuff was fairly rudimentary, and it was fairly commonly used. It was widely used. Today, everybody's got another new gadget to use, and these wines are a reflection also of some of the best grape growing that we've seen in the last, I would say, in the last 30 years. We're at the very peak right now. Nobody's trying to do what they did. And so there was a slowdown in the industry in about 1990. So we're looking at about 30 years now between that slowdown and the development of great grapes. And you really have sourced some fabulous fruit here.
Well, it's stuff. It makes me wonder what it's going to be like in 30 years or 40 years from now. I'm not going to be around, but I just wonder what the advancements are going to be like. We won't be able to see, but how they're going, because no one stands still. And so however well we've done now, I mean, just hard to imagine,
I think one thing that's going to happen is that a little bit more distinctiveness is going to creep into some of these varietals. We've seen a lot of vineyard-designated Zinfandels. We're seeing an awful lot of vineyard-designated Pinot Noirs. I think vineyard designation is where the wave of the future for high-end wine.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That follows the European tradition, if you will, the nomenclature. What is it, Germany before 1970? You couldn't. The labels are undecipherable, if I remember.
They're still somewhat undecipherable.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Let's get further into that.
What, the labels? Well, yeah.
Well, the real problem with the Germans right now is that they want to identify the greatest dry wines made from single vineyard sites. And these are designated as Grosses Gewächs. Mm-hmm. And if you see GG on a label, that means it's going to be dry and it's going to be from a single vineyard. And these wines are not cheap. They are really expensive, the dry ones from Germany.
So, really?
Yeah. Today, a sweet German Riesling, you can buy some for, $6 to $10, $11, whatever, and you can find good drinking. The really good stuff is dry, and it's going to be a lot of money.
When you're on a budget, though, way back then, there's Liebfrau Milch and Zeller Sport Scots and, and those other ones. I don't know if anybody remembers May wine.
Yeah, I remember. That was flavored with woodruff.
Woodruff, yeah.
What is woodruff?
It's an herb or some spice of some sort.
Yeah.
Wow. To hide the flavors.
Those are some of the first wines I ever had.
Yeah.
Barry,
what says Pinot here?
Barry, what are you...
This was a best of class in the $20 and under. This is Laurier. It's a label owned by the Two Buck Chuck people. Not to associate with them, but this
well,
one...
Well, everybody loved the Two Buck Chuck. Yeah. Dan, what were your thoughts on that?
We can't get into that here, but... for value, it was really, it's always reliable, very clean winemaking, not very much distinctive character in terms of varietal, in terms of locale. It all has a California appellation. This was a project that was begun by Jacob and Barbara Shiloh, and was eventually...
This Laurier label?
The Laurier label was a couple that actually... came over from Israel, founded the property, and they made wine for several vintages. Steve Test was the winemaker, very inventive and creative winemaker, made some fabulous wines through about 91, I guess it was, or 92. And then the brand was eventually sold to Kendall Jackson, and then the brand itself was shifted over to Fred Fanzia and his Bronco Wine Company and Evolution.
And they're doing quite a job in the value end, I think, of things. We sell massive quantities of their various labels in the store.
That's a nice wine. What's the retail on this?
$10.99.
Impossible.
Yeah. That's a really... Carneros Pinot Fruit. It's pretty remarkable.
Really?
Yeah.
For that kind of money? No.
They've put together some really reasonably priced, amazingly reasonably priced
Fred Franzia has got some of the best winemakers in America, but nobody ever heard of any of them.
Yeah. It's best of class out of, I think, maybe 60 Pinots in that class. So.
Tom Markey is here. It's Markey.
Mackey.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Tom Mackey. It's Mackey Sellers. And of course, my dear friend Jim Morris is here.
Steve, it's good to be here.
Well, it's always good to
these are
you.
Fancy new digs.
Cool, huh?
I haven't been here since we were doing it out in the parking lot with an 8-track.
What were you doing in the parking lot?
Well, we recorded
buying some stuff out of his
trunk.
Laying down some tracks.
Tom Mackey is here. Mackey, Tom Mackey Sellers. Go ahead and, Dan, talk about another.
Well, let's see. We've got the Chardonnay, the Charles Krug Chardonnay, which I don't have a shot of yet. So
what
I'll
a delicious choice after all these big reds.
That's right. Well, I'm looking for it.
You're a highly trained professional there, Dan. I know you can. You want to rinse that?
That's fine. Go ahead.
All right. There you go. Let's rinse these out. This is how we do it here. So, you know, one of the things that I love about the show is Dan Berger's podcast. You have a podcast, don't you, Dan?
Well, it's his podcast.
Oh, that's
I contribute to it.
Oh, excellent.
Because I only contribute one word, though. One word.
And the word is...
Subscribe.
Thank you.
That's right.
Go to calwinecountry.com, calwinecountry.com, or anywhere where great podcasts are offered. You can catch it everywhere. And
it's a preemptive
song. Every episode California Wine Country, the internationally award-winning show, is available at calwinecountry.com or anywhere else.
And this week it's free.
No, it's always free.
That doesn't obviate.
See, I download it for free, and then I sell it to my friends out of the back of my trunk.
Yeah. You and
I. That's a nice Chardonnay.
We have to talk about that.
So Charles Krug makes some pretty darn fine wines from. We own a little over 850 acres of planted vineyards throughout Napa. So, and the Carneros vineyard from which this lovely Chardonnay comes from is fabulous. It's south of the town of Napa. It's adjacent to, I believe, Artesa. I'm going to mess that up, but it's a fabulous. It's one of the few areas in Napa you can really grow cooler varietals like Pinot and Chardonnay.
A little bit of spicy, almost minerality component to this really pretty
nice
wine.
The Carnero Chardonnay is just—it's a little bit warmer. It's because it's further inland. It gets that kind of, the fog burns off a little bit differently than the Sonoma Coast and Russian River Shards that are popular in Sonoma County. So, Carneros represents well in the Napa world with the Charles Krug Chardonnay.
It's nice. I like the new packaging too. Mm-hmm. Kind of updated.
Yeah, we're attempting to stay ahead of 1965.
Right.
So,
really,
when no Chardonnay existed,
exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Pinot Chardonnay.
Yeah. Pinot Chardonnay in those days.
Yeah, right. No, it's.
Thanks,
I mean,
Dom, that was a great tip.
Yeah, no. It's what's fun about our thing because nearly all of our wine is estate fruit. This year, just for the 75th anniversary of the Mondavi's purchase of Charles Krug Winery, we actually went back to one of the heritage grapes. We have a Chenin Blanc that brought in from Clarksburg, which is one of our heritage grapes when it was first purchased. And so we have three whites. We do a beautiful Sauv Blanc, as well as the Chardonnay and the Chenin. And then we're known for our Cabernets. It's like in Napa, Cabernet is king. We truly just, that's what we're known for. We have everything from Yountville fruit to fruit in Rutherford to Howell Mountain fruit to St. Helena. We get all of these amazing appellations are represented in what we do, and it's the reason Napa is known for cabs.
Charles Krug.
I remember that Chenin Blanc was hard to get when I first got in the wine business. It was allocated.
Yeah.
You had to know somebody.
What was the
wine club only wine.
What was the peak volume of that product? That was the go-to wine of the century at that moment.
I wish I had my tasting notes from the 46 Chenin Blanc that we had.
You didn't bring that in?
I totally. Wow.
What's wrong with you?
It's turned a little in the bottle. But but no, it was actually one of the more widely planted varietals in the valley.
That was the absolute go-to white wine in America at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
70s, 80s.
But our winemaker, Stacy Clark, she was
good lady,
famous for her Chenin Blanc at Pine Ridge, and now we have a nice little run of it for our wine club for the next 2 to 3 years, and we'll see if we can continue it because it's a beautiful bottle of wine.